Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, though, talking about what's going on with your gut and your bowels mightn't feel like the most comfortable conversation to have, but with approximately 50,000 people in Ireland living with inflammatory bowel disease, expert wants us to start speaking up. Well, here to tell us more about the pain, the discomfort and often uncontrollable symptoms that many people face on a daily basis, I'm joined by Professor Karen Boland, who's a consultant gastroenterologist at Beaumont Hospital. You're very welcome, Karen. Good to have you with us. Will you tell us about IBD? First of all, and the symptoms, because it's a very broad ranging condition, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It stands for inflammatory bowel disease as distinct from IBS, which sometimes people can get confused between the two. That's irritable bowel syndrome. It's a chronic inflammatory condition where you get inflammation of your gut, and the majority of people have either Crohn's disease or colitis. It can affect throughout your gut, but 20% of people will have associated conditions like skin rashes, joint pain, problems with their liver. So it's very wide ranging, and the presentation can be very wide ranging. But most people will present with weight loss, a lot of frequency of the bowels, getting up at night to go to the toilet, and bleeding particularly is another red flag. And it's important to, I suppose, make people aware of that and aware that those kind of symptoms aren't normal and they're something that should be checked out. Mm-hmm. Just with the nature of the symptoms, sometimes people can delay having the conversation about that.
Yeah, because it's awkward and it's not a comfortable conversation to have.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it hard to diagnose specifically what it is?
For some people, because of where the disease is. So, for example, if you've Crohn's disease, you can get it anywhere from your mouth right down to your bum. So if it's somewhere that's very deep in the body, it can be hard to get to the bottom of it, and people can have a long journey towards diagnosis. But the majority of people, once they get on the right path, then an endoscopy, and sometimes even we have stool samples and scans, will help us get to it. So often the biggest delay in my experience is in that period of time before people actually start to get on the correct avenue for help. And they can be symptomatic for 18 months, years, sometimes on and off before they get their diagnosis. And that kind of pre-diagnostic stage can be the biggest delay, really.
Now, there might be people who will never seek help with this. So that's why it's hard to get a handle on the numbers of people out there who are suffering with this condition. But your suspicion is that the numbers are on the rise. Is that the case?
Absolutely. I mean, in part because of our lifestyle. So it's really a condition of westernized countries and developed countries. It's really interesting. If you were to look at studies of countries where people from third world countries migrate into, for example, Ireland, those children of those of that generation will adopt the same risk of inflammatory bowel disease as everyone else in the community around them. So it's something about our environment that's making this go on the rise, and the pathology behind it's really interesting. We're doing a lot of study behind it, but because it's on the rise, we really need to get the word out there about how to access help.
Okay, so when you say it's possibly our environment, is it what we're eating?
It's most likely that has some part to play in it. This kind of triad of background to why inflammatory bowel disease happens. You've got your genetic risk, which is pretty low for the majority of people. Then you've got your immune system. So if something might have happened to an immune system and it got a priming event, and then your environment around you. And for most people, we think it's related to diet, and we're doing a lot of research in that. And that, because that impacts on your microbiome. But then there's some data around kind of urbanization and environment. But it's most likely probably your diet impacting on your microbiome and the bacteria in your gut that's creating this switch and turning on your baseline risk.
What about living too clean a life in terms of antibacterial cleaners and you know, not coming in contact with things that we might have done a generation ago?
Yeah, that hygiene hypothesis is so true for many conditions, including asthma. There's a very fundamental common pathway in terms of the immune switch that happens between asthma and even IBD, where you get a different type of T cell, which is an immune cell that starts to get activated. And definitely lifestyles that are kind of more hygienic. So, for example, if you're an only child, if you're living with a lot of hygiene, if you're living on a farm, it reduces your risk. So loads of siblings, like I know from my, I've got four kids, so they all get a bath once a week, so they're fine. But like the kind of people that are getting baths every night that are super clean, not living on the farm, that kind of thing seems to increase your risk, but not hugely. And it's difficult to quantify it, to be honest with you.
But again, you mentioned that immune priming situation, which is interesting. So if you get an infection when you're a child, that might trigger something here that leads to a problem later on.
Potentially. I mean, the reality is that a lot of that is probably in part through bacteria. And we only have the technology to really look into that over the last 10 to 15 years. So it's a really evolving situation. But if what we think is that, yeah, you could have some sort of abnormality that happens, like a lot of antibiotics or a particular bacteria, even in adulthood, that can prime your gut. There is definitely some sort of a genetic link in there. And if you were to study, say, first degree relatives of patients with Crohn's disease, they have what we describe as a leaky gut, but that might never turn into a disease. So there is some switch, and it's absolutely possible that it could be a bug that you get, or a virus, or something in your or in your environment that's doing
and
that.
Is there a particular age group where you see these conditions emerging?
Yeah, there are two peaks. It can happen at any age. Babies can get this, and that can be really difficult to control in kids. But the two big peaks would be people in their 20s, which is why it's really important to talk about it and to get help, because that's a huge part in your life when you're going to college and you're having relationships, things like that. And then actually there's another peak in your late 50s and your 60s as well, especially for a subtype called microscopic colitis. So particularly perimenopausal women and postmenopausal women as well. So they're the two high risk areas, but you can definitely get it at any age. I wouldn't say to somebody who's 40 and having a new onset of symptoms that you should take it easy and not worry about it.
So what does it look like then? You mentioned, you know, it's particularly sensitive if you get these symptoms in your 20s. It's very difficult for some people, isn't it?
It's difficult. Like, I mean, I think back to when I started work, which would have been kind of my mid-20s, which is really your peak time. If you're in an environment where you're going into meetings, it's one thing to excuse yourself because you have a coughing fit. It's another thing to excuse yourself because you're having to rush to the toilet every hour. And some people are having to do that. And so it's a sensitive area, and it's sensitive, and it's difficult for people at home and in the workplace to know how to talk about that in the way it is in anything. You know, whether you're talking to somebody about grief or a cancer diagnosis or any condition, sometimes people just find it hard to find the language. And I think because of the symptoms around this, some people can find it particularly challenging to know how to support their loved ones. And I think that's why this new campaign by Crohn's and Colitis Ireland is really welcome. And it's being, you know, run by a psychologist called Jennifer Wilson O'Rahilig. And I think it's great to have those tools. And for me as well, as a clinician, I'm definitely learning all the time about how to speak to patients about this to get them to open up a bit more. Because if you really know what's going on in their lives, you can help them a bit better.
Well, they need to be able to, it sounds to me from what you've said, they need to be able to speak to the school, to the college, to the employer, so that there's some understanding there that, that this is what I have to deal with on a daily basis.
And I would have to say, in my experience, people find it really difficult to communicate with their employers around this, and we support them through that. The majority of the time, employers are really, really supportive, and schools tend to be phenomenal. Every year, we have a kid who's doing his Leaving Cert, who gets a diagnosis a month before, and the supports that the schools put in place for them are really excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are the treatments then that are available to people?
The main treatments, I suppose, that the first thing I'd say is that sometimes when people think about Crohn's disease, they think about lots of operations, and they might know somebody who was really sick, say 30 years ago with Crohn's and in hospital all the time. We have transformative treatments. So the baseline is when you first come and you're diagnosed and you're very symptomatic, you'll probably get a course of steroids to calm it down. There are some other entry-level treatments, the 5-ASA class, so the commonest ones would be acicolon, mesavant, those kind of names. They're basically tablets that can reduce the inflammation in your gut. But most people with moderate to severe disease will have injectable medications. And I was listening to Michael Barry a few weeks ago in a debate he had with an oncologist, and he was talking about some of the new medications for Crohn's disease that were being funded. And we're lucky in Ireland, the HPRA, we get great access to these medications. So most people will be on those kind of injectables that they have to come into hospital for, or that they give themselves at home. They're called biologic drugs and other tablets. They're small molecule drugs. They're transformative. And for the majority of people, they give you back a great quality of life.
So are treatments then developing quickly? Is there a lot of research happening in this area?
It's massive. I mean, the first major biologic was in between 2000 and 2002. And that was when I was kind of I was on the wards in Beaumont Hospital as a medical student, and I was seeing all these drugs and people who'd be incredibly sick one day and better the next. Like it's unbelievable.
A switch, like flicking a switch.
In 30% of people, they can go from having 20 bowel motions a day, and the next day they're well again. It's unbelievable. Some people it's more of a slow burn, but it's, you know, really inspiring to see that. Mm-hmm. So they were the kind of drugs we used first. We've got really good at knowing how to use them, and now we have many more drugs. So sometimes I'm in the amazing situation of having to help a patient choose what drug they want and what drug is right for them, as opposed to this is all we have for you.
Now, I have a listener who has got in touch this morning, and they tell us that they've had two colonoscopies and have been diagnosed with acute diverticulitis, which controls my everyday existence. I'm currently unable to work due to the severity of my condition. And I was wondering if your guest can recommend anything to reduce the flare-ups.
Yeah. So acute diverticulitis is not inflammatory bowel disease. It's where you have these pockets in your bowel that become inflamed, and it's incredibly painful. So if you have a lot of diverticulitis and you're having to be hospitalised and getting recurrent episodes, you know, say 3-4 in a year, it might be something where you have a conversation with the surgeon about having that segment of your bowel removed. But for most people, what I would suggest in the first instance is really keeping an eye on how long you're requiring antibiotics, getting to know your symptoms so your GP or your consultant can help you get onto antibiotics quickly, mm-hmm. and making sure that you're not getting constipated so that the stool isn't getting stuck in the pockets that's causing the inflammation.
Okay, well, Karen, thank you very much. And we should let people know, and you've mentioned it already, but just again, it's World Inflammatory Bowel Disease Day, and Crohn's and Colitis Ireland have this new guide on how to talk to friends and family about IBD and hopefully address talking to people about it in more detail. That's the aim, isn't it? To find the courage to do that.
There's a webinar on tonight. I'd really welcome anybody who's interested to have a look online, whether it's family or patients, and register for that and give you some tools around that.
Thank you so much, Karen, for coming in. That's Professor Karen Boland there. Now,